Greetings, everyone. It is now time for Marked Safe. Tales of your very favorite and most beloved disasters. On Marked Safe, we discuss events and details that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Please listen responsibly and stay safe. And now, here with your hosts, Brianne and Melanie, this is Marked Safe.
It is my turn to have the sickness.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. At least I can confidently say you did not pass it on to me.
Are you sure? What if I was spooning you in your house at night?
I mean, you should have let me know at least.
I did, technically, in the Horrible Ghouls group the other day. I said that I was thinking our first meeting, I would just come in your bedroom window and big spoon you. I never said I would stay till you woke up. I'm not that kind of gal.
All right.
No, I'm a cut and run gal.
You're the hat
maybe
woman.
You can get it from me. I am the hat woman. I come big spoon you, and then I'm gone.
Yeah, I don't know what this.
I have references on this.
I don't know what we have going on right now. Just some sort of cough or whatever. It's definitely not COVID. We took a bunch of tests and they all came negative. But I just, for once in my life, wish we could just all get sick, kind of like start to finish at the same time.
Break with symptoms on the same day. Yeah.
Yeah, just like all at the same time. There's seven of us in this house and it's like, it's so staggered. So like when we get sick, it feels like it's been going on for months, you know. And then Aria, she had her birthday. She didn't even get to go to school because she was sick.
Oh my God, that's awful.
And of course, that looks suspect. It's like.
Yeah.
But.
It looks like he just kept her home.
Yeah, which she didn't want. She loves her teacher. She wanted to give her teacher a hug, so.
Oh, what a fucking bummer.
Yeah, but I don't know. It worked out, I guess. But yeah, it's still lingering. And I'm by myself with the babies right now. So if we have to take breaks, I will apologize in advance. So with that said, you want to jump into the brackets?
I would always love to jump into the brackets.
So we are narrowing it down to our final four. So I'm very curious about this one. So this one, I feel like these actually still pair together a little bit.
Okay, so we're in the second go through now.
Yes.
Okay, so everything's had its first day in the sun. Okay.
Yes, I'm ready. I like that.
I've been waiting for this.
Okay, so this one is the smell of after the storm versus gasoline.
See, this is really tough for me because I'm really conflicted about after the storm because, like, to me, before the storm and after the storm are two completely different smells, but it's so similar and I feel so strongly about before the storm. Like, if it was that, I'll tell you right now, that would win, full stop. Mm-hmm. But after the storm, like, has some almost bummer associations for me because it's like, I love the storm and now the storm's over.
Oh, that's sad, Brianne.
Yeah, I know. So, like, after the storm is not... It actually kind of bums me out a little bit, but it's so similar to before the storm. I feel like it should like win, but at the same time, like, I mean, am I wrong? Those are two different smells.
They are different smells.
It's like wet dirt and stuff after, but it's ozone and stuff before. It's different. Oh my gosh, this is tough. What would you do? I'm supposed to have a phone a friend this time, remember?
I mean, I do love gasoline.
Me too. I feel like this might be the time to go ahead and cut after the storm because I think I'm going to run into this every time. I'm going to be like, well, it was before the storm, but like, it's not.
Awesome.
And I
burn
think
it
I'm
all down.
Stay conflicted about this. Yeah, with gasoline. So I think I'm a little bit surprised. This take is so hot, it surprises me. Because when I first saw the bracket, I was like, yeah, it's close enough to before. That's probably going to win. But it's not before, is it? It's different.
Gasoline
it is.
I love that. I love that. Apparently, you're breaking people's brackets this time.
Am I really?
Yeah, I love it.
I'm mad at it.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing. I know that you're real jazzed up about it.
I'm super fucking jazzed up about this episode. There's a chaotic man.
Oh, okay. Right up your alley immediately.
This may be the worst human being we've ever covered on this podcast.
No.
Yeah.
We've covered some bad human beings.
He's pretty fucking bad.
I'm trying to think about, like, the absolute worst people we've covered. Who do you think's the worst person we've covered?
Scatini's really bad.
I knew you were going to say that.
But he has nothing on this guy.
I would say Hatman.
I don't know. I think I might take Hatman over this one.
You haven't met Hatman. Okay. I need to know more now, though. You have piqued my curiosity. I think I'll stick around.
All right. So, David Glenn Riggs was born on March 7th, 1962 in Raytown, Missouri.
Hold on. Is he a Pisces?
I don't know. Is he?
You hate Pisces men, don't you?
I do hate Pisces men.
Hold on. What's his birthday?
March 7th.
That sounds Pisces to me. Let me look. Yep.
I got to be careful with that because he was born 2 days before Aria, and she's like my fucking
buddy. Is she a Pisces?
Yeah, she has to be, right?
Well, I mean, the cutoff is somewhere. I don't remember. I think it's later in the month, though. But it seems to be you and Pisces men specifically.
Yeah. Like, we'll just narrow it to Pisces men.
Yeah. Okay. So, no surprise, this is the bad dude, right, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. Carry on.
So,
because I know you would let me go a whole episode slandering, like, the victim or something. Being like, well, there's that piece of shit, huh? And then it turns out he's the one who dies. I don't trust you anymore.
Gosh, you do one episode on lightning bolts, and then it's over.
Forever.
Forever and ever. Well, I will try to never do that to you again. I promise I will give you a heads up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to regain your trust, whether you like it or not.
Stop trying to be the top Melody. You.
So David attended Raytown South High School. Go Cardinals. Yes, I looked it up.
But you didn't look up whether he was a Pisces. What the hell?
I didn't.
We are really two different people, mm-hmm. aren't we?
There, David played the trombone for the school's band.
I don't like it.
Until he didn't.
I don't like it.
Well,
I don't like trombonists.
You hate trombones?
I hate them. No, well, actually, yes, I do. I individually hate trombonists because I've dated a couple really bad ones. And I also, no, it's saxophones I hate, not trombones. But I hate saxophone music and trombone players.
Just, is it like brass is ass type thing? Like, you just hate it all?
No, I like the French horn just fine. So cute and curly.
Oh.
Not all brass is ass, but saxophone and trombone, ass.
Ass. Yes.
Listen, my takes are boiling today.
I am so worried. Do we have trombone players? Do we have saxophone players? I would like to apologize
on
behalf of my co-host.
What if it's a trombone?
Unless you're a Pisces man, and then you can just go fuck yourself.
What if it is a Virgo trombonist who lives in Ohio? Thoughts and prayers. If they stick around, they're a tough one.
Yep. All right. So he's in band, but he allegedly decided one day it was a good idea to piss into somebody's tuba.
It was, because brass is ass. Listen, maybe I like him after all. He was like, brass really is ass.
All you have to do is just piss at someone's tuba.
I would piss in his trombone. I would piss in anyone's trombone.
Well, David got in big trouble for that. And
did he?
Yeah, he got kicked out of band.
Well, shit.
Yeah. And I guess trashing brass soon escalated into a whole ass life of crime for him.
Oh, shit. Okay. I personally don't think that started with trashing brass. I think that started with playing brass.
Fair enough. When he turned 17, David checked into a Ramada Inn under assumed name. He had distracted the hotel clerk and swiped just over $100 from the till. No biggie. When the law finally caught up with David, he was in possession of multiple fake IDs and credit cards, all under different names.
Ooh, and you said he's 17?
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
David pled guilty to misdemeanor charge and was sentenced to 2 years probation. But probation was not going to stop David from criming. A month later...
To be fair, I don't think it stops many people from criming.
No, no. A month later, he was arrested again for trying to steal a TV.
Okay.
If they wouldn't have taken
his... Why couldn't he just buy that with his $100?
Well, I'm sure they took the $100 back.
Well, but I mean, he was on the lam for a while, wasn't he? I feel like by the time they
caught him... Oh, no, they caught him fast.
Oh, they caught him right away. Yeah. Okay.
Again, he cut a deal and pled guilty to another misdemeanor charge. This boy's like just getting little slaps on the wrist here.
Mm-hmm.
He received a suspended 60-day jail sentence, and then they just tacked on another year of probation. Did David learn his lesson? No.
I'm shocked.
David...
I really felt like he was on the right track with the tuba.
Oh, no. No, no, no. So, like, in his late teens, early 20s, David tried his luck with insurance scams.
Okay.
But he was busted again and given an additional 5 years of probation.
Oh, my God. Imagine deciding to be a career criminal and turning out to just be this bad at it.
Terrible. Right from the
get-go. Like, that is disappointing.
Yeah. Well, from here, David decided to go legit and just start his own business. Moken Productions Limited.
Cleaning tubas?
Cleaning tubas.
He's got a special ingredient.
Well, listen. Because David, he has such an esteemed musical background.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He played trombone in the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus Band.
Did he really, or did he just tell people that?
That's what he told people. So with that background, he was going to produce radio jingles for commercials. All right?
Okay.
It was going to be a fucking success. Because even...
Was it though?
Yep. Listen. Because even though, like, there's no timeline here. It's new, yes, but... He had already worked with global giants like AT&T, Mitsubishi, and Budweiser.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know that slogan, "This Bud's for you"?
I mean, not really.
You've never heard that? It's a famous...
No.
Okay. Well, David came up with that all on his own.
Okay. Really?
He did.
Okay. It's not that good, I don't think. Do you like it? I mean, it's famous, yeah,
it's
but like
famous,
Donald Trump. But is it good?
I don't know. David thought so. I mean,
David thought a lot of things.
He co-opted it, so.
Okay.
His client list was so impressive. David was able to borrow over $3 million from local Kansas City banks to, like, fund his production company.
Okay.
With the loan,
it's concerning.
It is very concerning. With a loan, he was able to, quote, build a studio and fund some extravagant habits. So he bought a Lamborghini. At some point, he got a pilot's license. And basically, like, David is just living it up.
Okay. I didn't see his crimes going this well, even, so.
He's falling up.
Okay.
So with the new studio, David was actually able to expand his company into video production. And despite his shady ass background, he actually started getting like real legitimate work.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's the epitome of fake it till you make it.
Inspirational, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Even though David was getting legit work, though, it wasn't enough to pay back his lenders and investors. So he decided to make his company public. It was a dumb move on his part. The accounting firm David hired to get him into the stock market quickly realized he was full of shit, and this officially put David on the SEC's radar. So the Security and Exchange Commission, the SEC, is the U.S. government agency that, quote, makes sure publicly traded companies tell the truth about their businesses and treat investors fairly, putting the needs of investors before the needs of the company. The SEC does not fuck around. And David knew right away that his shenanigans were definitely going to get him more than probation this time. So he did what...
He must have had some shenanigans, because you imagine at this point he would be kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Well, if you're only getting probation, probation, probation...
Yeah, like, I feel like you would be kind of flippant about things, but if he's not, like, man, he must have been up to some shit.
Mm-hmm. He did what any reasonable man would do. David and his girlfriend Brenda went on a document shredding spree, wired a bunch of fucking money to the Bahamas and Cayman Islands, and then went on a long-term vacation around the world.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. With a name change, of course, because you cannot be a con man without a good alias. David Riggs was now... Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
David Rogers.
Big moves there, Dave. Big moves. Really doing something.
David is first and foremost a businessman. So even though he was on vacation, he really, really wanted to get back to work. So David decided to try his hand at rhino horn smuggling.
Of course he did. I love this story just because I cannot wait to see what crime he's going to do next. It's such diversity.
Honestly.
He is just like, it's like he just throws a dart at a one of those big, you know, wall things of just crime. And it's just like, sure, I guess. Why not?
This is one of those moments, like, you know how I really wanted the Count Dante movie?
Yes.
I need the David Riggs movie. Honestly, I cannot believe that this thing has not been covered extensively. It was a rabbit hole after rabbit hole. I could not believe I found myself in it.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I feel like if I were a career criminal, I would kind of pick a lane and stay in it, maybe do some crimes. And then when that stops working, maybe do some kind of similar crimes. But this guy is like, he will do literally anything as long as it's a felony. That's it.
Yeah. He wears many hats.
He's a jack of all felonies.
Yeah, so rhino horn smuggling, I guess very lucrative, also very illegal.
Yeah.
This chapter of David's life could be an episode in itself, but for time's sake, I'm just going to kind of bullet point it. If you want the juicy scoop, there is an expose you can check out. It's called Contraband, South Africa, and the International Trade in Ivory and Rhino Horn.
I'm on tenor hooks. Continue.
You're what?
I'm on tenor hooks.
David forms this smuggling ring, right? What David didn't realize is that one of his accomplices is actually an undercover investigator in South Africa.
Oh.
So they hatched this plan to abduct the secretary of the Natal Parks Board offices in Maritzburg, South Africa. They're going to kidnap this poor woman.
As one does.
They're going to steal her keys.
Uh-huh. Okay, that seems kind of like a low-level criminal scheming, stealing keys.
Yeah. Well, they got to get the secretary. They got to get her keys. And they're going to go into the storeroom and they're going to steal $16 million worth of rhino horns and ivory that were in the vaults.
Okay, I feel like this is either going to be a complete success, and then he's immediately going to pivot to doing an art heist or something, or an utter failure. And, like, okay, I'll listen. I will listen.
I love this.
I'm just really, I have no idea where this is going.
I did not either. So your guesses, I love them. Keep them coming.
Okay.
So they have this plan. They're going to kidnap the secretary. To create a diversion, they also plan to throw Molotov cocktails and hand grenades in a nearby town to divert the police away from where the operation was.
This man is the human definition of doing too much.
Too much.
Too much.
But before their plan was actually put into place, David decided to take a quick solo trip to Hong Kong to look into the smuggling market there. He wanted to
listen. I don't know if I love or hate this guy. I mean, I know he's the worst guy ever, but I just...
He's ambitious.
He's motivated, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And he is creative, confident, motivated, and chaotic. It doesn't even feel like enough.
Well, okay. Listen, he's about to come in at $16 million worth of rhino horns and ivory. Like, he's got to find places to do it, so.
Okay,
He's going to travel.
My God.
So, when he gets to Hong Kong, customs quickly figured out that the Australian passport that he was using didn't belong to him. And when they searched his suitcase, they found it was full of his girlfriend's panties wrapped around rhino horns.
No.
That's it. It was just stuff full of panties and rhino horns.
Seriously?
Yes.
Are you
kidding? I'm not kidding. And like, apparently really? The girlfriend like didn't know anything was going on. And she was like highly pissed he stole all her panties.
Panties are expensive, dude.
Why does she have a whole suitcase full of panties? That's a lot of panties.
That's your question here?
I mean, they are scamming money, so. I mean, I would buy a lot of underwear, I think.
This is... Oh, I would buy so many underwear. You know about my underwear problem.
Yeah, I don't know. And can you imagine, like, I, like... get secondhand embarrassment at airports watching people get like checked out through security anyways. Could you imagine like being caught with a suitcase full of underwear?
I really do feel like the underwear would not be the point in that scenario though. I feel like the suitcase full of rhino horns would probably be a little bit more front of mind.
I don't
know. No? Not you?
Okay. It's weird is all I'm saying.
It's weird, all right. Yeah. Wow. I mean, was he thinking that if they opened it, they would just be like, nothing to see here, just a panty collection and just close it?
Just a single dude with a panty collection? That's, yeah, like, that's alarming that's not, to me.
Like, fill it full of men's clothes or something, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if it was a bunch of tidy whities.
And how big are rhino horns or how big was her ass? No judgment. It's a good thing. But aren't rhino horns huge?
I think so.
Panties aren't that big.
If it was a bunch of tidy whities, I feel like it would have been different.
Because, I mean, they would shift. I guess I'm picturing sexy panties. I feel like they would shift around. They wouldn't wrap well. Like, this is fucking inefficient. And at this point, I feel like this guy is just doing shit for dramatic flair.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Because that's stupid. Like, that's not even good packaging, just from a packaging standpoint. No, rhino horns are big. Even big panties are way smaller than a rhino horn. You could have put anything in there. I swear to God, he wanted to put a thing full of panties just to say he did. Just for this episode, maybe.
He just wanted to make the most chaotic bingo card ever.
Just to exactly. That's what he did. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So... Mm-hmm. Obviously, he was arrested immediately, and he would actually spend a year in jail in Hong Kong waiting for extradition back to the United States.
Oh, damn.
When he returned in January of 1990, he faced 23 counts of bank fraud for his dealings with the production company and one count of passport fraud. He took a plea deal where he pled guilty to just one count of bank fraud and one count of passport fraud. Mm-hmm. And he was given probation.
Of course.
I'm just kidding.
That's why he keeps... Okay. I wasn't even surprised. I'm like, guys, that's why he keeps doing this.
He was actually sentenced to 10 years with his time in Hong Kong prison credited. But after just 3 years, he was paroled. So he didn't spend a whole lot of time, you know?
Yeah.
In 1993, he moved to Atlanta, eventually getting his parole transferred to Tampa, Florida a year later to start up a new post-production business legitimately this time.
Really? Wasn't he? I've heard this before, David.
David's a Florida man now.
Well, I mean, David was born a Florida man in his heart.
Hey, he paid for his crimes. David said, I made a lot of mistakes. I'm not saying I'm perfect, because I am not. A lot of people have made the same mistakes. A lot have made less. A lot have made a lot worse. A lot of people never got caught. None of that is justification for what happened to me. I'm sorry it happened.
I'm not going to lie. He's kind of right, though.
Yep. I'm sorry it happened. The only way I know how to make that right is to run my business and conduct myself to the highest ethical standards. Ask my clients, and they will tell you that is what I do.
Will they tell? Okay. I'm not sure that's true.
We are halfway through this podcast. Okay, listen, so
I'm halfway sympathetic to David. This is why I have historically dated such walking red flags, because I'm like, I don't know, that is well written. God bless it. This is why this happens to me.
He's very charming. He's very charming.
Yes. I mean, I will fall for some good logic for bad shit any day.
Well, as charming as he was, word started to spread that David was back to his old ways. And the Tampa Bay Business Journal reported that David had once again conned multiple investors and suppliers.
Foiled again.
Unable to escape his reputation, David reinvented himself again, moving to California. David set off to Hollywood, a self-described world champion pilot and aviation entrepreneur.
That's my favorite thing, is a self-described good pilot. Mm-hmm. Not just like a good pilot.
While visiting Reno, Nevada in 2005, David met with another pilot named Terry Fregley. Terry was a real estate developer who had quite an impressive resume. He served as vice chairman at the Tallahassee Regional Airport Advisory Board for a while, as well as time serving on the advisory board of the Challenger Learning Center, IMAX. Terry was passionate about aviation. David told Terry he was a Hollywood producer and was on track to make the first big aviation film since Top Gun released in 1986.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Terry, like Brianne, was charmed. Was so charmed.
I'll be the judge of whether he's the worst person ever.
And so Terry convinced his friend Bob Zimmerman to join him in investing in David's big aviation movie. Bob forked over $100,000, and Terry agreed to pilot one of his two L-39s in a flight scene in the movie. The movie was called Succubus, Hellbent. Have you seen this movie?
No, but it does sound familiar.
I've heard...
Was it a major movie?
I've heard of it. I don't know if it was major. I mean, it's a horror film, so...
Yeah.
I guess for that genre, probably. It's billed as a beautiful demon leaves death in her wake while stalking a wealthy womanizer in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So, like I said, transparency, I have not watched this movie. It does look like absolute trash. But for this to be pegged as the next big thing since Top Gun, literally blows my mind. Because it just seems like softcore porn. Horror movie version.
A horror movie?
Horror.
Softcore porn horror movie.
It literally just has one scene of some rich kid flying a plane. So he's marketing to these investors as a Top Gun movie, but now it's a horror film.
That's very different. I was wondering where the Top Gun comparison even came from.
Yeah, not really.
That seems so random.
Anyway, so let's jump to February 26, 2006. Terry and another experienced pilot, Skip Robinson, took to the skies in David's personal plane, an L-39 he named Wild Childs. Okay.
Of course he did.
This plane, it's sleek, painted black. It's got the pinup girl with the huge tatas. You know what I mean? It's everything you would think that David would own.
Mm-hmm.
So Terry and Skip, they're in David's personal plane. David flew ahead of them in a twin-engine Cessna 310 with a camera mounted to it. So David is doing the shots. Quote, throughout the flight, Skip and Terry discussed the safety of the flight. Although Skip was clearly the more experienced pilot, Terry was, after all, the pilot in command for the flight. Robertson, however, described his role as simply, just here to be your little voice, and to watch over the various power and control settings of the jet. At around 8:25 that morning, David radioed to Terry, "Give me a sharp snap roll to the right and pull down out of the frame." Moments later, the L-39 slammed into the canyon north of Mojave, California, killing both Terry and Skip.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that when we were talking about doing movie disasters...
Yeah.
I went through a Reddit thread, not a Reddit thread, but a Wikipedia thread. Like, this never popped up. I've never fucking heard about this.
Yeah, because I looked up movie deaths too. This never, I don't remember seeing this. Mm-mm.
It wasn't long after the crash that David got in touch with Terry's friend, Bob Zimmerman. Not out of concern, but because he was a fucking scumbag. David told Bob that Terry had signed a waiver accepting responsibility for the plane he was flying. And David was actually considering suing Terry's wife since it was his personal plane that was destroyed.
Wow.
Uh-huh. I mean,
okay, that's a cool move when the guy just died.
Yeah. This poor lady, her husband.
That's super chill of David.
Bob didn't think Terry would ever in a million years sign a document like this. Like, he was a very respectable businessman. Like, he crossed his T's, dotted his I's. Like, it didn't seem right. But clearly, this scared the shit out of Terry's wife, because in a settlement, she ended up just giving David Terry's personal plane. He also had an L-39. So she replaced it for David. So he got a plane out of it.
This is just surreal.
Mm-hmm. The NTSB, in their final report, determined the probable cause of the accident to be the flight crew's failure to maintain terrain clearance during an intentionally performed course reversal turn at a low altitude. David Riggs was not done with aviation in Hollywood, especially since he just scored a new plane off a grieving widow. And he swindled more investors for movies. With the money just rolling in, he now bought a Mercedes. He went on lavish vacations, and he used film budgets to, quote, fund his flying habits. David reached a new level of douchery in 2008. He really wanted to impress investors attending an American Film Institute convention. He needed the money for his brand new movie project called Kerosene Cowboys. With so much on the line, David decided to do a publicity stunt.
Oh, God.
Flying in his L-39, he performed low-level aerobatics over a very crowded Santa Monica pier. He made several passes, pulling into steep climbs above the pier and its iconic Ferris wheel. And when I say low-level flying, like, scary fucking low. On a call to 911, one tourist said, "I'm out here on the beach on Santa Monica Pier, and there are two military jets buzzing us. I mean, they're coming in close. They're maybe 10 feet above it."
Oh, my God.
In absolute disbelief, the dispatcher asked, 10 feet above the beach? Like, 10 feet.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a military-style jet buzzing about 10 feet over your fucking head?
No.
It's insanity. A second pilot, Skip Holm, was also part of the formation, and a third plane was towing a banner promoting the movie.
Ooh.
Adorbs. I did post a link of the video. There is video of this. There's a YouTube video. So if you want to see it, it will be in our show notes. It's people are panicking. They're screaming. They're running away. Like, you hear this, like, in the beginning of the play, it's like, oh my God. Like, it's bananas. The unauthorized aerial show prompted a Federal Aviation Administrative investigation, because duh. FAA Inspector Kevin Sullivan found himself opening a can of worms when he started looking into the stunt. He said, "Every single time I picked up the phone to make an inquiry, five other doors opened."
That must have been what it was like researching this episode.
Exactly. This included David, quote, "selling illegal airplane joyrides to the general public with experimental airplanes and without a commercial license."
Fun. Love that journey for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Kevin said, "It's kind of like if a driver with a driver's license goes out and drives a tractor trailer semi. You're out of class. The point is, you can't, as a private pilot, fly an airplane and get commercial compensation." I love that. You're out of class.
That is a good line. Mm-hmm.
David was convicted of violating a rarely used provision of the California Public Utilities Code that is designed to protect the public from careless and reckless pilots. Ultimately, David was sentenced to 60 days in jail, ordered to pay $6,000 in fine and to clean the beaches up as a part of his 60-hour community service. It would be a surprise to no one that David never actually cleaned anything.
Oh, I'm shocked.
Additionally, David's pilot license was revoked for 1 year by the FAA.
He started a professional littering business instead.
Just to spite them.
Just to spite him.
So he loses his pilot's license for a year. And so I'm telling Cody about this, like, as we're going through it. And he was, like, blown away. He said, I can't believe that post 9/11, like, they didn't just take his license away completely.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Jesus.
God. I agree. Yeah,
this
I agree.
Is bonkers.
But David's license was reinstated. And on top of that, they reinstated it early after only 210 days.
What the hell?
Yeah. I mean, whose dick is he sucking? I really gotta know. This is the FAA. Like, what?
Whose dick isn't he sucking? Oh, my God.
It's just, it's baffling to me.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what certificates David actually held was a mess at best. David got his private pilot's license in 1984. I did find that, like, last minute. But I had trouble tracking down if he ever received his commercial license after the Santa Monica Pier incident. I found one article that said a couple months after his license was suspended by the FAA, he managed to obtain a Canadian pilot's license. Which also makes no sense to me because I was under the impression that you couldn't even get into Canada if you had a record.
Yeah.
David's rap sheet is longer than his CVS receipt. You know what I mean? Like, how? Canada, what are you doing?
Maybe he's the reason they don't do that anymore.
I don't know. The whole thing is fucking weird.
Maybe they had to just shut it down and comfort themselves with Tim Hortons. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so my super hot husband, he helped me dig in to, like, the website, the FAA website. And it does look like he had or was trying to get his commercial pilot's license in early 2012.
Oh, great.
All that to say, David is messy and shady and back in business. This time with his new company, Mach 1 Aviation. Allegedly, the FAA received multiple complaints that David, quote, was operating his jet contrary to limitations of his experimental airworthiness certificate. I think Cody was annoyed with me at this point because I asked him what it is and he was like, just look online. The FAA has a website.
Whatever. You have a pilot husband.
He was also on his way to work, so he had to do like some hazmat training or something. I don't know. Cody has the weirdest job. So I went to the website, and so it says that this certificate is issued for several categories, including exhibition, to exhibit an aircraft's flight capabilities, performance, or unusual characteristics for air shows, motion pictures, television, and similar productions, and for the maintenance of exhibition flight proficiency. While the government regulations forbid carrying passengers for hire in such aircraft, unless, like, the owners have permission from the FAA, this is what I gather. It would appear that David interpreted his certificate in a way that would benefit David.
What? Really?
It's kind of like...
That would be a first for David to be so selfish.
You know, it's like when you're cherry-picking, like, Bible verses... You know, to suit your life.
People do that, yeah.
This is what David's doing with his certificates.
Mm-hmm.
So, essentially, what David was doing, yes, he was giving rides out for hire, but, he was billing it as movie production. Partnering with Incredible Adventures, they advertised the flights as a Hollywood Top Gun adventure, selling the rights as filmmaking adventure in which a person who purchases the 3,000 to 5,000 L-39 jet packages would be able to feature themselves in their very own movie.
What?
Mm-hmm.
This guy reminds me of my dad. I've told you he's Frank Gallagher. This is some Frank Gallagher shit.
This is Frank Gallagher shit. Quote, "You're not just the star of this short film. You share screenwriting credits. Each flight is designed to match your taste for adrenaline. Each script prepared to meet your expectations. You determine what maneuvers you'd like to perform and whether you'll make low passes through the canyons or fly low over the ocean." I'm sorry, I don't think we should let civilians make those decisions.
No.
No.
No, I don't think we should. Okay.
On May 18, 2012, David and his business partner, former Air Force captain and air transport pilot Douglas Gillis, had booked a birthday party of 8 people who would take turns on 40-minute filmmaking flights. 2 flights were scheduled for the morning, with the last flights to take place in the afternoon following lunch.
Okay, hold on. Tell me now. I don't know, like, if David is dead or in prison at the end of this, so let's just assume that he's still on his bullshit. If David invited you to a birthday party, would you go, yes or no?
No.
Why?
Wait. To, like, fly in his plane?
I don't know. You get some mail, and it's like, it's an invitation. And it says, yes or no, do you, Melanie, want to come to a party, birthday party with David? Would you come? That's all the information you have. It could be anything.
Fuck, I probably would.
It could be clowns and a sheet cake and ice cream. It could be a plane. It's David. You literally
It could be rhino
don't.
Horns wrapped in panties.
It could be straight up anything.
I would go.
But all you know is it's a birthday party and David is involved. You'd go?
I think I would.
Okay.
He's a piece of shit, but he conned a lot of people, and I'm sure I would. I mean, who's to say, like, that wouldn't happen to me?
That you wouldn't con people?
No, that I wouldn't be conned by him.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I've been conned before.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not out of my money, but there was a con man giving me money that he conned other people out of.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was, man, the early aughts were wild.
On your life, please. Please.
Yeah. Maybe one.
Let day. Me do clickbait for it with some of the shit that you've told me, and we'll make it Patreon only, and we will be millionaires.
Okay. All right. Thank you. This birthday party, they're taking these people. It's a birthday. They want to do something cool. So this group is like, we'll do these flights. After lunch, David, Douglas, and their passengers, so the morning flights went no issue. After lunch, David, Douglas, and their passengers loaded into the 2 L-39s that they had. Shortly after takeoff, Douglas radioed in a canopy call, like there's an issue with the canopy on his jet, followed quickly by a mayday call. Hearing the call, the passenger in David's plane looked out the window where he saw the other L-39 in a right turn, then level off, followed by a puff of dirt. Both Douglas and his passenger, 65-year-old Richard Winslow, perished in the crash just half a mile outside the Boulder, Colorado airport.
How many plane crashes can one man be involved in?
What are we on? 2 now?
Yeah, that's too many.
2 and then a buzzing incident.
A buzzing incident. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's higher than the average number for sure.
Yes, it is.
I don't need to look on the FAA website to know that.
Do you hate David yet?
I'm not going to answer that. I mean, he's bad, don't get me wrong, but, like, there's something about the hustle and just the ridiculous energy. And I mean, he's got to be smart. Like, he is coming up with the most outrageous loopholes and getting away with it. I don't like him, but I guess so far I have to respect him a little.
All right, well, see if I can get you to hate him.
Okay, keep trying. You know some of the people I've dated, Melanie. Good luck.
In November of 2012, the FAA once again revoked David's pilot's license due to the Boulder City crash. In the order, FAA attorney Naomi Suda wrote, "You have a history of committing other violations that indicate you put your own economic gain over aviation safety. You are willing to sacrifice the safety of others for your own personal financial gain by charging for flights in the jet. David did not like this at all. I'm sure part of him was thinking, it was like, it's not my plane to crash. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is what he decides to do next. He decides that he's going to sue three people that were in that group, that birthday party group. Okay. Because they provided testimony to the FAA, who in turn
and
took his license.
And sue them for that?
Yes.
I just don't feel like it works that way.
I mean, it's his fucking MO. Like, someone dies because of his disregard of safety, and then he sues the victims. He did that with Terry's wife.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, he's doing it again. He's just suing people. Sorry, my phone went off. What the fuck's going on? Powering down. Cody, don't tell me you're powering down.
I'm not cutting that. Just
tell me. You're coming home, babe.
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 Powering down. No chance I'm removing that.
Gosh. He's ridiculous. All right. So, quote, the 44-page lawsuit, complaint, and supporting documents states that each of the passengers booked to fly with Riggs and Gillis that day via Incredible Adventures knew that the flights were to be conducted solely for the purpose of filming. One of the individual complaints, this one against Mike Smith, alleges that, quote, notwithstanding the contrary to these written representations, and in an attempt to punish Mach 1 Aviation Incorporated and to interfere with Mach 1 Aviation Incorporated's economic relationships with its customers, defendant Mike Smith made false and fraudulent statements to the FAA indicating that his purpose on 18 May 2012 was to get a ride in an L-39 aircraft and not to make a film production.
This is outrageous.
It's so outrageous. With David's flying career in the United States uncertain at best, he decided to make his way back to China with his single-engine Link Air 320 in tow. And again, I have a lot of fucking questions. Remember, he served almost a year-long prison sentence in China before being extradited back to the States.
Yeah.
How is he, like, all willy-nilly be able to, like, get back into China?
Are you trying to find out so you can go to Australia?
Yeah. I don't have the gusto that David does. he just goes back to China? Like,
it's ballsy.
In China? I feel like their stuff's stricter.
I don't feel like I don't want to be a bad boy in China.
But guess who's back?
Back again.
Shady's back.
Back again. Tell a friend.
So he goes to China. David decides he's going to fly in the Shenyang Air Show. Before the show, David set out to practice some stunts. Aboard with him was 19-year-old Justina Zhang, who was serving as his translator. He was apparently practicing making Link Air graze the surface to produce a sort of skiing effect. He was also allegedly told not to take off due to rainy conditions, but it was really hard for me to find confirmation on this, so just take that for what it's worth. Okay. Either way, it was rainy, and David chose to perform this stunt.
I just feel like David has to have, like, whatever inner spiritual part of yourself you need for manifesting, like, his must be on turbo mode. Because I want to know what he's doing, because I do really feel like he's manifesting a lot of things very strongly. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know more.
Around 1 p.m., the wheels of his aircraft caught the water, and it crashed into, I think it's Caillou Lake. I try to look up the pronunciation, but everything's like Caillou, like that annoying cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So apologies. So he crashes in the lake. Justina was pulled from the water pretty immediately, but she would later die from her injuries at the local hospital. Sidebar. One article. I found only one online article that even mentioned this poor girl's name.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. And she lost her life. She was simply identified as David's translator by the press. She's definitely more than that. She deserves better. She was a college student. She was a very talented musician. People are more than their fucking job title. Like,
well, people, I hate that. I absolutely hate that. But also, I hate it when there are people, I think we talked about this in an episode once. I hate it when there are people who are so chaotic in an almost charming way or almost charismatic way that the people that get hurt get overshadowed because they're not the most interesting part of the story.
Exactly.
There's this guy, you know, pissing in tubas and buzzing people on the beach, and that's more interesting. So just some poor girl is just a footnote. She's not in your version of this at all.
She's a baby. She's 19. Like, she has her whole life.
Yeah.
David's body was recovered from the bottom of the lake 3 days later.
Wow.
He was cremated in China, and his remains were sent back to Kansas City.
And then he pulled one last cup. I'm just waiting for it.
I do want to close today's episode because there's a quote from, I think it's Kim Bass. He works in television. He created Sister Sister. He wrote In Living Color. And he created Nickelodeon sitcom Kenan and Kel.
Wow.
He was also...
Finally, a cultural reference that means something to me.
He was also the writer for David Riggs' first film, Succubus Hellbent. So I feel like this, I'm just going to close it out with this because it's, well, you'll see.
Okay.
He said in an interview, David Riggs was a lying, cheating waste of human DNA. You can quote me on that. A liar, a cheat, an absolutely evil person. And though I wish no human being any harm, my assessment is the planet is better that he no longer walks on it.
Damn. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
Isn't that the craziest story you've ever heard?
I think that is the most bonkers crazy story you may have ever done. I can't believe I'm about to say this. I think this guy has out-chaosed Count Dante.
Absolutely.
And that, I mean, those are some big shoes to fill.
You know, I'm sure there's more. I'm sure he's done more shit that it just wasn't, like, publicized. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you don't just wake up.
That's
what he got
caught doing. That's the tip of the iceberg.
You don't wake up one day and just piss in somebody's tuba.
I don't know. Some days I wake up and I would definitely piss in somebody's tuba. Depending on the person. I mean, I don't think I can agree with that, but... But I do agree that there's probably lots he didn't get caught at. Because, I mean, if the shit he did get caught at is so absolutely egregious and ridiculous, I mean, yeah, there's no way.
Yeah. David Riggs, everyone.
Wow. Thank you for that story. That is exactly what we needed.
Oh, I had such a good time looking into this. But, yeah.
What a fucking
He is just like, you don't want to go to a birthday party with him, though. Because it's just like,
I would though.
Everybody else is.
I would.
I mean, until the end. I mean, but his life is like.
I mean, he's a shithead and it would be the worst night of my life that I would live to regret forever, but I would go.
Do you want some disaster relief?
Sure. That episode was my disaster relief, but sure. Okay, so. I've got a little bit of a segue from our story to our disaster relief with regard to why I would go to a party thrown by David. Okay, so I was thinking, we're going to talk about mental health and our disaster relief.
Oh, I love it.
Get excited. I was thinking, you know, upfront full disclosure, I don't really have any major diagnoses. I don't really massively struggle with depression by any means. But now and then, like every maybe year or so, I'll just, I don't know, kind of, it's not a seasonal thing. I don't know. It's just, I'll go through something and sometimes get on some meds for a while, sometimes not, sometimes a little bit of therapy, sometimes just wait it out and it goes away. But
sometimes, you know, piss in someone's tuba.
So I haven't tried it yet, but I'm not going to lie, I'm inspired. I feel like it would relieve a lot of stress for me. So I was thinking, I was going through a little bit of a funk. I don't know if I would go so far as to say depression, but probably a little bit close. And I was thinking about, you know, proactive ways that I could deal with that, and thinking about the usual suspects, medication, therapy, B12, gratitude journaling, yoga, all that stuff. And I started thinking with the gratitude journaling. You kind of know about this because yes, this is in our mom group. I hate it. Gratitude journaling at our mom group. Like, I hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it.
It's like the toxic positivity.
It kind of is. And it's just like, first of all, some days suck. And yeah, like even on those days, you can find something to be grateful for. But, you know, let's say it's the third sucky day in a row and I'm just writing in my gratitude journal, well, I woke up today, you know.
Right.
I have my family kind of thing. Like, that's true, but if you're just looking at your gratitude journal and it's a few days where that's kind of all you're writing, like, that's actually kind of fucking depressing. Also, grateful to who? Like, I'm not going to, you know, delve into my religious affiliations and our disaster relief, but you know, I don't necessarily feel that that connects for me, religion-wise. And then, you know, if I forget to do it or I can't think of anything, I kind of feel ungrateful. It's just like, I don't know. I've tried it many times. It always ends up making me feel worse. So this idea came to me that what if I make a list of just like everything where I'm just like, yeah, I'm glad to be in the same world as that. Like whether it happened to me that day or not, just like good things that exist.
Like smells before a storm.
Yes, exactly. But like all kinds of things. I mean, silly things, major things, profound things, mushy, vulnerable things, grown-up things, you know, like all everything where you're just like, yeah, like it's good that that's in the world and I'm happy about it. I decided that what if I made a list and I try to catalog every good thing in the universe and I make that kind of like my long-term quest for my life to just try to find all the good things and write them down. As soon as I thought of this, I had several follow-ups here. One being that, first of all, as soon as I started thinking about that, it shit was everywhere, just everywhere. Like, as soon as I started thinking, I was like, I gotta write that down, I gotta write that down. I don't have time to make this list. And I'm like, what a good problem to be overwhelmed by the volume of good things in the world. And furthermore, it definitely keeps you in a mindset of like looking for things so you can catalog them. And also I'm like, you know what, if I'm at a fork in the road, should I do this or do that, take this path, take that path, you know, say yes or no to an invitation to a birthday party from David, my question for myself is it going to be an experience where I may have, you know, discover something in the universe previously undiscovered that I can add to my list?
I love that.
And then I'm like, wait a minute. And then if I have a day where it actually fucking does suck and there's nothing new to add to the list, I can just read the list. And I can be like, it's not a shitty world, it's just a shitty day. Like, there's still all this stuff.
Look at all this good stuff.
Yeah. And it's happened before and it'll happen again and it's happening to someone else and there's more to discover. And it's like, so I started this list, I don't know, like a month ago, a few weeks ago. It's so long.
What's some things that you have on it?
I've got it on my phone. I can pull it up right now.
Yes.
It's so long at this point that when I feel some type of way, I like go on a random number generator, like A through Z, and I read that letter because it would be time prohibitive to try to go through the whole list. So tell me, give me a letter. I'll tell you what I have in that letter. And that's what we'll do.
D for David.
D for David.
I should have said T for tuba.
Well, D's pretty short. T's pretty long, though. We'll do D. Okay, so my D's, delicate, unique, or antique rings.
Yes. Particular
style for rings. Disaster movies. Discus Hans Fisch. Doing the line work on a watercolor painting. Dogs in public that you can pet. Dogs' paw pad and ear smells. Drawing sentimental interiors of homes and driving on huge hills, that feeling in your stomach at the top.
Oh, I love that feeling.
Yeah. So those are my D's. And that's like one of the shortest categories that I have at this point.
I love that because there's like disasters and stuff.
Yes. And I mean, like if I just randomly scroll through here. We've got like almond scented things, big cozy cardigans.
I love list of things that make you happy.
Cruise ship bingo, electric blankets, falling asleep in a chilly room with a warm blanket, fresh cut lumber smell.
Ooh, I got one for you.
What? Tell me.
When kids say a word wrong.
Oh, I've totally got that one. I've got a list of Adelaide's mispronunciations in here. She used to say hospital for hospital.
Oh my gosh.
Restaurant, yayo. Yeah, I've got a list of Adelaide's mispronunciations in here.
Josie's been doing cremote, like controller and remote together. Oh my gosh. Oh, I love that. I'm going to make myself a happy list.
Please do.
Do you have a name for this?
No, I don't really. I have it on my phone as the list. But then I got Aaron into it, Sandwich Daddy, who's in our group posting cursed content probably as we speak. I got her in on this, and she's making a list. And then I'm like, oh my God, we should like make this a whole thing. And I'm trying to make it a thing in our mom group. I'm trying to make Fetch happen where we have like a weekly check-in and post the new shit we've added to our list so we can get ideas from each other's list. It hasn't really taken off completely yet, but that's probably because I suck at follow-up. But listen, we could make this a thing with the ghouls.
We could make this thing
with the ghouls. I so badly want to make this a thing with the ghouls because I feel like we have
a lot in common.
I feel like a kiss ass when I say that we have abnormally cool listeners, but like, I swear to God.
No, we do. We're very, very lucky.
We do. Yeah. So I would be very interested to hear what they have. And I would really love to
make this. Can't we do like a file or something on our group?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know.
Or if somebody thinks about it, can they like hashtag the list? I don't know.
We need to figure out a way. I'm sure that we will drop this tomorrow and we'll have some data organizers and librarians come out of the woodwork and be like, I know how to do this. Because again, we have abnormally cool listeners. So I don't know. Guys, I want to make it a thing. What kind of thing should we make it? Maybe we can have a thread and discuss it and see what we're going to do. Because I would really love to make this a thing. It has genuinely made a difference for me. I made this list. I started making it a few weeks ago. And there's probably like, I don't know, maybe every other day that I stop and read a category real quick. And it has fixed my funky mood every single time.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're just looking at happy stuff.
Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, okay.
But not like fake happy stuff. Like stuff that genuinely makes you happy.
Yeah, like, yeah, in my A's I have airport carpet. I don't know why. Airport carpet's just always ridiculous and I like it.
Oh, Portland has the best airport carpet.
See?
Like, yeah. That's a thing. You go Portland, Oregon airport, like, you're taking a picture of your shoes on the carpet. It's like a whole thing. I think they even have, like, an Instagram hashtag with it. I don't know. I've done it.
No, I'm Googling this. Oh, wow. Okay. It really is right there.
Isn't it awesome?
I feel like ours here is just as stupid.
Oh, it's the best. It's so loony.
It all is, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Airport carpet. Okay, so yeah, my disaster relief is like my ultimate disaster relief project. And I've got my kid in on it. She's got a list. It has some of the most ridiculous shit on it. It's got some, let's just say she's a little ghoul. I'll tell you about this privately. I don't know if I actually want to put how weird my kid is on blast. she's one of us though, guys, trust me. Okay. Yeah, so let's make this a thing. I'm actually super jazzed about it. I've been working on this for weeks, and it's, like, giving me some genuine dopamine. And, like, DIY dopamine, it's not always readily available.
Right. Yeah, I love that.
So, let's do this. What's yours?
I'm going to shout out my daughter, Aria, this week, because she just had her 8th birthday. And for some reason in our family, like, 8's just kind of like our big number here, you know? I don't know why.
Because they're past that cursed 7-year-old thing.
Yeah, I think so. Like, 8's just, like, special. It's when they get their ears pierced. Well, listen, I'm not, like, 8. I'm going to fucking poke holes in your ears. You got to get earrings. I just feel like that's like the youngest I would go with, like, because yeah. I want them to make the choice. You know, it's,
I mean,
their
I don't know that I have like any guideline on that myself, but Adelaide is 8 and she's now ready to get her ears pierced.
Yeah. So I don't know. She's just, Arya is my very sensitive kid. She wears her heart on her sleeve. She was sick on her birthday, but like, it was so nice, like just spending the day, like cuddling with her. I don't think they've had a day off from school on their birthdays. Either any of my kids, except for the ones who
she'll remember that haven't, fondly when she is an adult.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I got her a thing of, so she's been really into Dragon Masters book series. She checked one out from the library in December, got hooked. It was like, I think it was like number 10. I'm like, well, we got to start you with number one. And she wound up reading the entire series from the end of December to the end of January. And we just got, like, the new one just came out this week. And, you know, you give her a Dragon Masters book and she's, like, sobbing about how, like, this is, like, the best day of her life. And I just love how, like, she truly likes the things that she likes and she doesn't give a fuck what anybody thinks.
I love that.
Yeah. I'm a little bummed for her because she finished that book, obviously, already. But she's into the magic treehouse now. So we did buy her some of those for her birthday. So I don't know if you got any recommendations on books. This kid is flying through them. I can't keep up. But yeah, she's blowing through books and I'm going to need some recommendations.
Your kids are cool.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe one day she'll listen to this, and if you do, Arya, you are the cutest little 8-year-old, and I love you.
I hope all of the kids grow up and listen to it so they know how much we love them.
Yeah.
And how fucking weird they all are. Like, these kids are just...
They're fucking weird.
They're strange. And I would like to say, guys, is there anything weirder than an 8 to 12-year-old girl?
No.
That is just...
I keep thinking about myself between that age range. Oh, my Lord.
Uh-huh. I mean, it is, I would argue it is just peak weirdness for any age, any combination. 8 to 12-year-old girls, just absolute high watermark on weird shit.
Yeah.
And I was no exception, and my kid is no exception.
Well, I really had fun today.
Me too. I'm excited to edit this one again.
All right. Well, I'll let you get to it. Till next time. Sweet dreams or no dreams. Hey, Horrible Ghouls. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your personal MarkSafe moment, you can send it to us at MarkSafePodcast@gmail.com. Please give our podcast a rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your buddies about us too. That goes a long way. If you want to further elevate your support, check out our MarkSafe Patreon page, where we have shoutouts, goodies, and some bonus content in the works. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks again, and as always, stay safe.